Sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on freedom when we come back. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong, terribly wrong, with the Ten Commandments, because they've been banned from our public schools. They've been banned from our public institutions, and they've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a very radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution back in 1787. And there's still one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty. You do not have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effect. Now, whether you call that the Mosaic Law or the Law of God or common law or natural law or karma or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's the place to start. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order one. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Freedom. We've been talking about freedom. Remember I said Mel Gibson, you know, in the movie Braveheart, last scene when they're just about to kill him, you know, the last great act of defiance. He cries out, "Freedom!" Kind of melodramatically. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was well portrayed, as Gibson usually does. And of course it generates in all of us, you know, this feeling of passion. For the one thing that we're taught from the time we're little children growing up is that we Americans, we Anglo-Saxons in general, but Americans in particular, cry out and yearn for this thing called freedom, because we don't work well, we don't fit in well with tyranny and Hitler and Stalin and Genghis Khan and Saddam Hussein. But in the series of programs, I pointed out that freedom in America has been on the decline. The kind of freedom of action, the liberty to decide for ourselves what we want to do, has materially declined over the past century. That back in 1900, our grandfathers and great-grandfathers had greater determination, greater freedoms, greater liberties to decide for themselves. For instance, in 1900, your great-granddad did not have to buckle his seatbelt or whip out his papers to show to the highway patrolman. He didn't need a marriage license or a birth certificate to have a family and to have a marriage. Today, these things are axiomatic. We all know that when we get married, we have to have a marriage license, that when a child is born, it must be registered with the state. We all know that when the policeman says, "Your papers, please," that we whip out our driver's license, passports. We all know when we fly on an airplane, you may be singled out to bend over, spread your cheeks, and let's look up your anus. It's part and parcel with the American way today in 2007, but it wasn't that way in 1907. Now, what caused this decline? So last time I showed you, over a long period of time, insurance, which we call limited liability, has taken the place of freedom of action. It's the desire to be secure. It's the desire to eliminate all pain. And the president has offered us that out in the war on terror. He said, "I'm here to protect the American people. You have to give up your freedom and liberty on flying in airplanes so that I can give you liberty. I can give you the kind of liberty and freedom that comes from security." But boys and girls, the kind of freedom and liberty that comes from security is not the same kind of freedom and liberty that comes from property. Let me give you an illustration. Remember, we talked about the board meetings of the various insurance groups through the century, the 20th century. Finally, in 1990, here's the ultimate insurance policy. Here's the ultimate security for you, wherever you live. The board was ecstatic. And in 1990, the board meeting came to order, and the subject was, we need to ban all hazards, just like President Bush. We need to ban all terrorists. A meeting of the board of directors was called, and the new chairman of the board, Jimmy Cartier, he called the meeting to order and said, I've called this meeting to discuss ways for us to cut costs and increase profits. It's the mantra of fascist corporate business. How do we cut costs? How do we increase business? How do we increase profits? So a dour, sober old man rises and addresses the meeting eloquently by saying, for 90 years now, we have been addressing this problem of increasing profits and cutting costs to the insurance industry. Now, I've held my peace for 90 years, and now I have the ultimate solution. It's plain that insurance is for the health, safety, and welfare of the people. And it's plain that we, here in the insurance business, are only interested in the security of the people and their ultimate happiness. And it's plain that we want to give them air without pollution. We want to give them automobiles without accidents or injury. We want to give the people eternal life. And for all of these blessings, we only want a small premium. And for this small premium, we will grant them limited liability to remove them from any responsibility for their own actions. Today, I would like to propose the ultimate insurance policy. This insurance policy will deliver to every policyholder 100% total protection from every hazard imaginable. I call it the padded cell policy. We will go to the legislatures and enact laws that require every person, whether natural or artificial, to buy this policy just like we do with auto insurance. That will give us 100% control over and access to the money supply. We will place the policyholder into a padded cell to protect him from falls, broken hips, and muggers. We will take his car away and put it into storage so that he cannot be killed by a drunk driver. We will close his factory and eliminate his work so that we can eliminate air pollution. We will take his guns to ensure that he cannot commit suicide, nor can there ever be any more accidental shootings. We will filter the air into his cell to eliminate any and all pollutants. We will prepare his food, and we will eliminate all cholesterol, sugar, white flour, and other harmful products that could make him sick, such as alcohol and tobacco, which will make him very, very happy. We keep the policyholder away from any power tools or hobby crafts. This will prevent home accidents. We will only allow sponge baths to prevent falling in bathtubs. There will be no more rides on airplanes to prevent death in airplane crashes. We will not allow alcohol or any other dangerous drugs, no cigarettes. This will prevent lung cancer. In short, gentlemen, we will eliminate every single possible hazard from every single policyholder, and we will collect the premiums, and we will pay out nothing in claims. The people will love it because they're getting full coverage and limited liability and total security. And of course, there will be no rights involved, no freedoms, no liberties, because the policyholder is reduced from status to contract. Gentlemen, we cannot lose because there will be no claims. Now all we have to do is determine the amount to charge for the premiums. Needless to say, the board was ecstatic. The police state imposed upon the Polish people, the Chinese people, the Russian people, in fact, all peoples, isn't any different from the police state that we Americans have imposed upon ourselves today. There's one glaring difference, though, in our adoption of the system. You see, we Anglo-Saxons, we the Canadians and Australians, the Western Europeans and Americans, have paid our money to have our rights subjugated to limited liability under contract. In the past, the Germans, Russians, Chinese, Poles, Czechs saved a lot of money. We Americans will have our Constitution. We still have our Constitution. And we can reject the limited liability in perpetual credit debt slavery and feudal tenure whenever we want to, accept responsibility for our own actions and for our own debts. The Chinese and the Russians don't have that option. Now, there are many people who want to trade their slavery for the rigors of life and the life of a free man. But for those few men and women who want to be free, a school is open in Isabella, Missouri. It's called the Gordon Law School. And we're here to teach anybody who wants to be free how to be free, how to stop practicing communism, how to stop practicing limited liability, how to start practicing the Ten Commandments and those 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments that we got from God through Moses at Mount Sinai. Not everyone in America registers his car with his government. Not every man or woman in America asks for governmental permission to drive or has a driver's license. 22 million Americans don't pay income tax. In fact, the last time I heard, it was way more than that. There are even some free men who don't pay personal property taxes. The flame of freedom is involved. Every person who wants to be free can free himself, but no other man can free him. I can't free you. Redress of grievance comes on the courtroom floor, not in a political rally, a union meeting, or a letter to the editor. The courtrooms are open. They're manned by knowledgeable jurists who listen to and rule in favor of a man's natural inalienable rights, if you knew how to claim your natural inalienable rights. Or that same jurist can slam the door on a slave in limited liability and leave him in his security. Now, there's no security in freedom. Freedom and liberty offer boundless opportunity, but no security. Now, there are thousands of free men in America, not millions. There are still a few thousand. The masses of people like security. They like welfare. They want limited liability. And they want that kind of dejection in their lives. For you to claim your rights, you must be compelled to defend your rights on the courtroom floor. So if you'd like more information, why don't you write to the law school here in Isabella, Missouri, and ask for our free general law CD package. And let's see if we can get you started on the road to liberty. It's a wild new concept. Now, let me show you that along with this thing of security and limited liability, we have adopted here in America, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, and in the Western democracies, the Anglo-Saxon world, we've adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Let me show you. The first plank calls for the abolition of property and land and the application of all rent of land to public purposes. Here in America, as an illustration, the abolition of property and land and the application of all rent or rents of land to public purposes is accomplished by property taxes. We rent our land, we rent our homes from our government and government agencies. And if we don't pay that rent every year, they will evict us from their property. Now, there's a land law, and it's in the Bible. It's in Leviticus 25, verse 23. And the owner of the land, this is the creator of the universe, says, the land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine, and you're strangers and sojourners with me. Now, here's a guy that says this land on planet Earth is his. He calls the Earth his footstool. Now, we have decided that that law, the land shall not be sold forever, is wrong, and we're going to fix it. And so we went to our legislatures, and we did that. And we now have real estate brokers who are licensed by the state to buy and sell land, which we were told not to buy and sell. Now, there's a way to secure land, a way to own land, a way to transfer land to the next generation, but it's not through real estate brokers, and it's not by buying, selling, and trading. And I would submit that the average guy today is totally bereft of any knowledge about how to handle land in the biblical context. Oh, I'm sure you know how to go out and buy, sell, and trade your farm. I'm sure you know how to convert it into Federal Reserve notes, how to take a mortgage on it, and pay usury and interest. We all learned that in public school, but we didn't learn how to handle land the way God instructed us to hold that land and how to pass it on, now did we? The second plank calls for a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. Hell, we all got income taxes. But you know, 100 years ago, we didn't have an income tax. That's 100 years ago. But now we have an income tax. How did we finance our government without an income tax before we adopted this income tax? Now, God answers that question by telling you in a rhetorical form in Malachi 3, verse 8 through 12. He said, will a man rob God? And yet he accuses us, and he says, yet you have robbed me. But you say, well, wherein have we robbed you, God? And God responds by answering, in tithes and offerings you've robbed me. And you're cursed with a curse, because you've robbed me. Even this whole nation has robbed me. In verse 10, he says, now you bring in all of the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in my house. And you prove me now herewith, says the Eternal of Hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be enough room for you to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, and neither shall your vine cast a fruit before the time in the field, says the Eternal of Hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, because you shall be a delightsome land, says the Eternal. Now, we Americans have adopted that second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and we've imposed upon ourselves an income tax. Now, that's all right by me, if that's what you people want, but there's a better way that produces greater rewards and greater profits, and it's called tithing. It's called property and property rights. Most people, when you talk to them about tithing and property, they look at you with a blank stare, like, huh, you must be some kind of religious nut. Third plank calls for the abolition of all right of inheritance. And we've imposed inheritance tax laws implemented by the marriage license. But God has said, if a man has two wives, one beloved and the other hated, that's polygamy, by the way, and they have borne him children, both the beloved and the hated, and if the firstborn son be hers that was hated, then it shall be, when he makes his sons to inherit that which he has, that he may not make the son of the beloved firstborn before the son of the hated, which is indeed the firstborn, but he shall acknowledge the son of the hated for the firstborn by giving him a double portion of all that he has, because he is the beginning of his strength. The right of the firstborn is his. That's Deuteronomy 21, verses 15 through 17. Now, that's the inheritance law from the Bible, a little bit different than the death tax imposed by the Congress of the United States, now, isn't it? But we Americans prefer the inheritance tax than to the inheritance law of the Scripture. And, of course, there's a little side effect that comes with it. It's the loss of property to future generations, and that loss of property goes to the state, and then that loss of property takes away from your children and your children's children the accumulated wealth, the accumulated property from generation to generation, and impoverishes them. So if you want to know why you're impoverished, just ask yourself, well, what was your inheritance? How much did you receive, lady, when you married? Where was your dowry? Where was your bride price? And young men, where was your inheritance? Now, the fourth point calls for the confiscation of the property of all emigrants and rebels. But the Scripture gives us an answer, and it says, but if you will not hearken unto me, and if you will not do all of these commandments, and if you shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgment, so that you will not do all of my commandments, but that you break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, and the burning ague that shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart, and you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. Now, you know, we Americans, we like to get out and work. We're all A-types over here. And we like to get out and hustle up a buck, only to see that at the end of the week, we're unable to make ends meet. We can't pay our credit card debts. We can't pay our mortgages. Our economy is in shambles. We're on the verge of an economic collapse. Our savings rate is now negative, has been for nearly 2 years. Hasn't been that way since 1932 and 33. Something's clearly wrong with our economy. And yet, we want to practice that fourth plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the confiscation of property of all immigrants and rebels. And as a result of that, we've been impoverished thereby. Plank number five. Plank number five calls for the centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. It's called the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, where Congress delegated the power to coin money to the international banking cartel. We call it the Bank of International Settlements today. Every nation in the world now has a central bank governed by the Bank of International Settlements. We have this worldwide tyranny imposed upon not just Americans, but upon everybody in the world, except those who still practice the biblical methodology of gold and silver coin. There is an economy that's commonly called, out in the conventional world, the black market, the underground economy. Now listen, our God gave us an instruction concerning these central banks' fiat paper money and unjust weights and balances. And here's the way he worded it in Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. He says, you shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you. For all that do such things, and all that do unrighteously, are an abomination unto the Eternal your God. The use of Federal Reserve notes, mortgages, interest, clad coins, commercial paper, unjust weights and balances, God calls an abomination. We go out with those plastic credit cards to Walmart and shop every day. We don't see that as an abomination, but we pay for it. We don't see Federal Reserve notes and mortgages, interest and closing costs, and etc. We don't see that as being an abomination, but your God does, and he told you so, plainly. We are, in short, the proximate cause of our own injury. That's what the bottom line is, and that's what we call it in law. When you come into the judge listens to you and he listens to your opponent. He comes back and he looks at you and he says, you know, Gordon, you're the proximate cause of your own injury. You brought this upon yourself. That's the bottom line. Number six, the centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. The FCC regulations and Executive Order 10,995 provides for the takeover of the communication media. The Department of Transportation regulations and Executive Order 10,999 provides for the takeover of all modes of transportation, as is recorded in the Federal Register.
Now, God instructed us concerning these two subjects when he said, You shall make no covenants with them, nor with their gods. And they shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you to sin against me. Because if you serve their gods, it'll surely be a snare unto you. Now, he told us that in Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. Not to make contracts with these foreign and alien gods. Don't make driver's licenses and birth certificates and marriage licenses and business licenses and contracts, permits, and agreements with these foreign and alien gods called New York, California, Germany, Italy, and France, and the United States of America, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. These are foreign and alien sovereigns who enact laws that are in opposition to the law of God, which he told us plainly, don't do that. Well, now, after all, we've got free moral agency, and we're smarter than God. Human beings are way, way, way smarter than their creator. And of course, you and I, we know a whole lot better what we ought to be doing with our lives and how we need to make marriage licenses and birth certificates and how we need the Securities and Exchange Commission. And we need licenses to do business so that we can buy, sell, and trade stocks, and we can have bank accounts, and we can have trading desks and all of the modern marvels of the economies of the world. We all know that. Okay. Now, as a result of that, we have now suffered a decided erosion in our ability to make these decisions for ourselves. Banks make decisions about how much interest we're going to pay on our credit card. Even though you signed up on that credit card at 8 or 10 or 15% interest, the bank has now decided that because you didn't make your payment to some other third party over here, they're going to raise your interest rate. And what are you going to do about it, sucker? You're going to sit down, shut up, fold your hands, bitch a lot, and do absolutely nothing about it. Now, I would like to suggest that whatever it was that we were doing 100 years ago, whatever freedoms and liberties and whatever privileges and immunities that we were exercising or practicing in 1907, were probably as good as, and maybe even a little better than, and quite possibly even a whole lot better than what we experience today. And I'd like to suggest that we consider going back to doing what we were doing in 1907, as opposed to what we are doing today in 2007, and let's see if maybe that change in our lifestyle, that change in our modality of conducting our lives, might give us more of these freedoms and liberties that we like to talk about so much. It's a halfway point, and I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed at the webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use here on the program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are sometimes hostile, or they are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do hear on this program, though, are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about freedom. Freedom, by definition, is the ability or the capacity for you to decide for yourself the course of action that you want to take. Now, it is true that there are some limitations. Even God Almighty Himself has placed some limitations on our freedom. In civilized society, there has to be some limitations, like thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery. If we didn't have some basic laws, for which God has outlined 10, they're called the Ten Commandments, these 10 basic laws for us to conduct ourselves, and then those 10 basic laws are construed by statutes, and there are 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments. Some of them are called judgments. And a judgment is like a rule of law that we see, for instance, in Numbers chapter 36, over an inheritance controversy that came up. How do you construe the inheritance statute when you don't have a male heir and you just have females? And that's called a judgment. In Anglo-Saxon administration, we follow that principle to this day. We have a thing called the Supreme Court. When we can't arrive at a conclusion, or when we disagree with the lower court's decision, we take it on up the line through the appellate process until we get to the Supreme Court, which actually takes the place of God Himself on the Day of Atonement, sitting on the mercy seat, who is going to settle these questions that come up from time to time. So we have in Anglo-Saxon administration the fundamentals of justice, the justice system that comes from the Mosaic Law. But now over the past 100 years, we've changed that justice system to the adversarial system. Now when we go into court, we're adversaries rather than seekers of justice. And we now practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our society rather than the 10 Commandments. And we seem to love it that way. So I thought I'd run through here and point out to you that if you want your freedoms and liberties back, we can get those back. We can have our freedoms and our liberties if we want to exercise the responsibility and the modality from which that freedom and liberty comes from. Our Constitution has not been amended. Hasn't been changed. I shouldn't say it hasn't been amended. We've got several amendments, but it hasn't been changed. The fundamentals of the Constitution, your rights to equal protection, due process of law, your rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness are still there. They're still intact. It's just like I've explained in the past, you know, when you join the Army, you waive your constitutional rights and you adopt a foreign and alien ideology, a modality of law called the Uniform Code of Military Justice. You can do that if you want. You can waive your constitutional protections, your Bill of Rights, if you so desire. No one can force you to do that. No one can make you do that. But you can do it to yourself. I can't do it to you, but you can do it to yourself. And that's what's happened here in America. We were so excited about limited liability, about security, that we forgot about opportunity and freedom. Security is not synonymous with freedom. Security is synonymous with tyranny. And the president keeps saying, well, the American people need to be protected, and I'm here to give them security. Okay. But when you have security in the airplane, you know, out in the airport, then they're gonna have to use whatever methods that they can think of here to give you that kind of security, you know, like bend over and spread your cheeks. These indignities that we're suffering here in our airports today now are the results of our quest for security. Now, if you want security, that's fine, you know. Hey, listen, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But I, for myself and my family here, we prefer opportunity in place of security. And we prefer to let the angel protect us from the terrorists as opposed to George Bush and the Republicans. Now, there's a seventh plank to the Communist Manifesto. It calls for the extension of factories and the instruments of production owned by the state and the bringing into cultivation of wastelands and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. That's kind of an obfuscation, but the extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state are called corporations. That's why we have a fascist corporate welfare state. It's the seventh plank to the Communist Manifesto. The bringing into cultivation of wastelands in Idaho, for instance, is called the Desert Land Entry Act. And the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan are called soil conservation districts. Do you have any of these entities around you or in your state? Well, of course you do. Of course you do. Now, this seventh plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the Desert Land Entry Act or some other act in your state, soil conservation districts and corporations, is a communist ideology. It is the opposite to the scripture and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Listen to what God instructed us. He said, this comes from Leviticus chapter 25, verses 8 through 24. He said, when you shall number 7 Sabbaths of years unto you, 7 times 7 years, and the space of 7 Sabbaths of years shall be unto you 49 years. And you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. In the Day of Atonement shall you make the trumpet sound throughout all of your land. You know, here's God telling you on the Day of Atonement, you people out there never heard of the Day of Atonement. You heard of Christmas, Easter, and New Year's, but then that's because Christians don't practice the law of God now, do they? He says, you shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. Liberty? Proclaim liberty in the 50th year? Where does this craziness come from? You didn't get that from the Communist Manifesto, did you? You didn't get that from George Bush. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and you shall return every man unto his possession, and you shall return every man unto his family. A jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. You shall not sow, and neither shall you reap that which grows of itself in it, nor gather the grapes in it of the vine undressed, because it's the jubilee, and it shall be holy unto you. And you shall eat the increase thereof out of the field. In the year of this jubilee you shall return every man unto his possession. Every man is returned to his property. This is the forgiveness of old debt. When was the last time in America you had a jubilee and you wrote off all the debts? What America needs today, in fact, what the entire world needs, is a jubilee to cancel all of the debt and start over for another 50-year cycle. That isn't going to happen, by the way. I mean, I'm not naive. I know that J.P. Morgan and Chase Manhattan and Citicorp and Bank of America, they're not going to write off all those debts. No, they're going to exact every last farthing out of you. But then you signed a contract with them, didn't you? You signed an application to get that credit card, didn't you? Who put that gun to your head and forced you to sign that credit card application or open that checking account down at the bank, huh? As we say in law, you know, you're the proximate cause of your own injury. And now you're enslaved, and now you're a credit debt serf, and you can't pay your bills, and now you can't even bankrupt out of them. This is the bankruptcy statute, boys and girls, that every 50 years, every man, if he's in debt, is removed from debt. In fact, it works every 7 years. You have to forgive every Hebrew his debts, and then every 50 years you got to return him to his possession, to his own land. And if you sell aught unto your neighbor, or buy aught of your neighbor's, or at your neighbor's hand, you shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the jubilee, you shall buy of your neighbor, and according unto the number of years of fruits shall sell unto you. This is the opposite to buying and selling land, boys and girls. This is the opposite to real estate broker's licenses. And according to the multitude of the years, you shall increase the price thereof, and according to the fewness of years, you shall diminish the price of it. For according to the number of years of the fruits does he sell unto you. And you shall not therefore oppress one another, but you shall fear your God. I'm the eternal, your God. We don't practice land Sabbaths and jubilees. We practice the seventh plank to the Communist Manifesto. We practice business licenses and real estate brokerage licenses, and we buy and we sell land, and we never return people from their debts to debt-free. Once a credit debt serf, always a credit debt serf. That's the philosophy of communism. Eighth plank calls for equal liability of all to labor and the establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. That's the Social Security Act. That's what we call it in America. I don't know what you call it in your country. But there's a statute here that says you shall not oppress a hired servant that is poor and needy, whether he be of your brethren or of the strangers that are in the land or in your land within your gates. At his day you shall give him his hire, and neither shall the sun go down upon it, because he's poor and sets his heart upon it, lest he cry against you unto the eternal, and it be sin unto you. Did you know that a wage earner has to be paid at the end of every day? Every day. Now, when was the last time you got paid? Was it last week or was it 2 weeks ago? You get paid once a month. I remember when I started, I got paid once a month. And this law requires that you pay your hired servants every day before the sun goes down, is the statute. Now, somebody's going to say, well, that's very inconvenient. I didn't make that law, kids. Don't blame me. But the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob made it, and he said that you're to be paid every day. And your boss doesn't pay you every day. In fact, what he does is he uses that as a float in the bank. He takes your vacation pay, and he uses that vacation pay of you and all the rest of your co-workers as an interest-free loan for a whole year. While you're paying interest on your student loans, while you're paying interest to the IRS on your back due or your past due taxes, the IRS doesn't pay you any interest on the money that you pay them and that they have to refund to you at the end of the year, and you think that the IRS is doing you a great big favor when they send you that refund check and they pay you not one dime's interest. But by golly, there's no bank in this country that isn't charging you interest right up to the day, daily rate interest that you owe. Now, somehow or another, our governments and our corporations aren't quite as fair as the God of Abraham, who says, hey, listen, you know, if you're going to charge this guy, then you got to pay him every single day so that you're not using his money. The length of time that you're going to use this guy's labor is from sun up to sundown. Then the ninth plank calls for the combination of agriculture. The combination of agriculture with manufacturing. Manufacturing industries. That's what we've done in this country. We've converted our agriculture now into an industrial process. We now have these super industrial farms where we have 10,000 sows in a single pig farm over here producing pork like we produce Chevrolet automobiles. A biological process was converted into an industrial process, and it pollutes the groundwater, it pollutes the land. It also calls for the gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of population over the country. We call this urban renewal, population control, metro-regional planning programs. But God instructed us to do something a little different. He said, and the Eternal spoke unto Moses in Mount Sinai, and he said, you speak unto the children of Israel, and you tell them, for me, When you come into the land which I give you, then shall the land keep a Sabbath unto the eternal. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard, and gather the fruit thereof. But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land. It's a Sabbath for the eternal. And you shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard once every 7 years. That which grows of itself and of its own accord of your harvest you shall not reap, neither gather the grapes of your vine under rest, because it's a year of rest unto the land. And the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you and for your servants, and for your maids, and for your hired servant, and for your strangers that sojourn with you, and for your cattle, and for the beasts that in the land, or that the beast that in your land, shall all the increase thereof be meat. Land Sabbaths and Jubilees are prescribed in the Scripture. We don't practice land Sabbaths and Jubilees. What do you think would happen if we did? You think maybe that God would pour us out a blessing, that there wouldn't be room to receive it? That maybe you could get out of that credit card debt, maybe you could get that mortgage paid off, you know, maybe? Well, how do you know? You have never tried it. Now, you've been practicing communism all of your life. How do you like it? Because if you like it and it's working well for you, stick with it. Now, you've been practicing these 9 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and you have not been practicing the biblical opposite or the biblical law. And if you're dissatisfied, has it ever occurred to you that maybe, just maybe, if we went back and practiced the biblical law, what if we went back and practiced the Ten Commandments like we were doing in 1900 or 1850 or 1900? You think maybe we'd get a different result. Maybe the result would be a little better. Maybe we'd have a little more freedom, a little more liberty. Just a little more. Maybe not a whole lot more, but maybe just a little bit. Listen to this 10th one over here. Calls for free education for all children in public schools and the abolition of children's factory labor in its present form and the combination of education with industrial production. And what we've replaced, or what we have done to implement that is we've provided federal aid to education and government-controlled schools. Now, God instructed us concerning this very thing of education. He says, only take heed to yourself and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things which your eyes have seen, unless they depart from your heart all the days of your life, but teach them to your sons and to your sons' sons. And especially the day that you stood before the Eternal your God in Horeb, when the Eternal said unto me, gather me the people together, and I'll make them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days that they shall live upon the earth, and that they may teach their children. Now, compulsory education comes from God, children. God requires that you educate your children from generation to generation, but not in public school. Now, we send our children to public school so that we can teach and train them to be communists. That's the objective. That's the purpose. Collectivization. The public schools teach us the exact opposite to the Ten Commandments. They teach us things like mortgages instead of land held in fee simple. We go to public school so that we can learn about Social Security and the security blanket instead of labor and property. We go to public school so that we can learn about Federal Reserve notes and fiat paper currencies instead of practicing substance through gold and silver. We learn about government-granted privileges instead of inalienable rights. We go to public school so that we can learn about equitable interest instead of owning property. We go to public school so that we can learn about banks and corporate credit cards in place of gold and silver. Our public schools teach us about stocks and negotiable instruments instead of private ownership. Our public schools teach us about bonds instead of private property. Our public schools teach us about public business licenses so that we can be doctors and dentists and lawyers instead of private businessmen. They teach us in public school about permits instead of private rights. Our public schools teach us about public interest professions so that we can be these doctors and dentists instead of common law occupations. We learn about interest accounts in public school, but we don't learn about substance and chattels. We learn about checks, spelled C-H-E-C-K-S, in our public schools, but we don't learn about warehouse receipts and C-H-E-Q-U-E-S. We learn about insurance and limited liability, but we learn very precious little about individual responsibility. Then we complain that our freedoms and our liberties are being taken away from us. We learn about marriage licenses in public schools, but we don't learn about patriarchal families. We don't learn about marriage from the Bible. We learn about marriage from the state. We learn about citizenship. They teach us how to pledge allegiance to the flag and sing the Star-Spangled Banner, but they don't teach us about denizens and denizenship. They don't teach us about loyalty to God. They don't teach us about you shall have no other gods before me. So in short, the common law, which is predicated upon increase and tithing and private business, can be summed up as people who hold land in fee simple, own their labor, practice substance and inalienable rights, hold property, use gold and silver, practice private ownership, private property, private business, and private rights. They apply common law occupations, use substance and chattels, warehouse receipts and CHEQUES, practice individual responsibility in a patriarchal family as a denizen. That's where freedom and liberty are located, children. Freedom and liberty are attributes of God Almighty. They are not attributes of communism and the civil law state. The attributes of communism, the attributes of the civil law, the Roman civil law, and of the state and of tyranny, come from mortgages, Social Security, Federal Reserve notes, government-granted privileges, equitable interests, bank and corporate credit cards, stocks and negotiable instruments, bonds, public business licenses, permits, public interest professions, interest-bearing accounts, checks, spelled C-H-E-C-K-S, insurance and limited liability, marriage licenses and citizenship. Those are attributes of slavery, of feudal serfdom, of communism. Now, I'm not opposed to communism, shucks. If that's what you want to practice, get after it. But it seems like to me that somebody at some point in time ought to come along and say, did you know that there was a choice, that there was something else out there, that you don't have to choose communism? You don't have to be a feudal serf. There's freedom out there, as Mel Gibson cried out in the final scenes of Braveheart. Freedom! Yeah, it's available. Comes under our Constitution, comes from the Ten Commandments, not the Ten Planks. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this thing of freedom and liberty from the perspective of the Ten Commandments and biblical law, which is where our Constitution and our founding fathers came to us and they said, let us give you this constitutional republic, not a democracy, but a constitutional republic predicated upon the Ten Commandments and 22 principles of that law contained in our federal Constitution. Then write to us here or call us or email us at the law school and ask for that free 4-hour introductory CD package. Remember, that's area code 417-273-4967. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Order yours. Please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for listening convenience. Your time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, we'll see you until then. Thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.